Welcome, everyone, to this edition of the Not So Common Podcast, the solo edition. I'm Pat Contry. No guests this time out. This is going to be a shorter one for a few different reasons. One, I'm finally getting close to being 100% recovered from my bad illness I had about a week and a half ago. Two, I am still in sort of life upheaval due to my impending move, and that's been delayed for a couple reasons. One, I am still trying to finish that NES Punk video I mentioned, but being sick put me on commission for like 5 days, so I'm way behind. And plus, I had something happen sort of spur of the moment. I had a visitor from out of town I had to spend time with over the past 3.5 days. And I can't go into the specifics why. Next year, you'll find out potentially why that person visited and who they were. And that's all I can say at this point in time. Overall, it's positive. But, you know, things have to happen for the reason the person that came here for it to happen. I'm being very vague on purpose. But that's what's going on. You know, and plus I've been ordering stuff for the house. You know, plantation shutters cost a lot of money. They look great, but they're expensive. So I try to use my game haggling skills to get a percentage off. Like, I spent $2,000 on these shutters, right? Like, faux wood shutters that, they look great. They almost look like real wood. They're made of, like, composite. I'm on the phone using, like, my game haggling, you know, I'm like, can you do a little bit better? Come on, I'm spending, like, $2,000 on ones. And, you know, I end up getting $100 off. So it doesn't hurt to ask. The worst they can say is no. So, yeah, I've been spending money on the place. On the house, buying new lights to get rid of the ugly ass chandeliers they have in the kitchen, for example, that are just gaudy as hell. You know, things like that, tearing down a wall between two bedrooms to make it one bedroom, which will basically be the new studio space and slash game room slash, you know, work room, and I can stream in there. So a lot of moving pieces in my life right now that I have to sort of work out while also trying to put out content. And having a podcast that's weekly now, even though it's an alternating podcast, makes it tougher. And, you know, and Christmas is coming up, so I have to order a bunch of gifts. Gift baskets for all. That's the easiest solution in the world for your family out there. If you don't live close to your family, grab a, you know, Omaha Steaks is always good, which is like a frozen queso beef basket. Or get them like a, you know, a wine basket. So I bought like 4 wine baskets. I bought some stuff for the girlfriend. I won't announce here in case she's listening. Ordered some stuff. And Frank, I'll hook up Frank with something. I bought something for Ian as well. Don't tell him. So that's all done. So Christmas shopping's done. Of course, then I have to deal with the awfulness of wrapping presents. And I used to be a horrific at wrapping presents. Now I'm just plain old, you know, terrible. So I've actually gone up the chart a little bit on wrapping presents. As far as I know, most men that I know are not good at wrapping presents. We're not good at like those triangle corners. You know, I can't figure those out. Not neat with those triangle corners, but I've gotten better. But yeah, you know, my mid-20s, I was probably horrific at doing that. It looked like a 3-year-old was probably trying to wrap presents. So the move's going to be fun. I'm not going to trust the movers with any of my, I won't trust them with most of my game collection. You know, maybe, hey, you can move that, the box of, you know, my box of 300 Atari 2600 games. Well, according to Renee from Storage Wars, that means those are worth $3,000. Oh no, they're worth like $400, those 300 games. So you can move those. And no, I'm not letting that go. You probably attacked me. That fool. Anyway, so I still got to move that stuff out. I bought a bunch of those Sterilite stacking containers for the NES games and for, like, the TurboGrafx games. They fit perfectly. You know, I got them from Walmart. And so my place is a disaster area. And what's interesting, though, is when you go to sell your place, because I have to sell my place here, my condo, after I move, is that you just know how awful your place is when you have, like, the interior designer come in and they have like the guy who does the, you know, upgrades to the bathroom come in and the kitchen cabinets, and they're just like have that look on their face like they smell a skunk the whole time, like, ooh, this place is filthy, it's gonna need a good cleaning. So yeah, I know that I know the place needs a cleaning. I know that. Yeah, I know that. I know the bathroom should the bathroom shower stall should be refinished. I know that. I know it's the handle's rusty. I live here. I don't. You don't think I notice stuff when I'm showering, when I'm shampooing and conditioning? I don't notice that. You know, maybe this isn't the best. The best shower stall. You know, but instead of upgrading that, I gotta, you know, I gotta buy a Panesian NES game. So, you know, I got priorities going on. So, but the place has to be painted, and then freaking new fixtures. Oh man, I gotta sell the place though. But that'll be a fun experience. Buying and selling, I guess, your house or condo is like the largest game deal you can possibly do. Because negotiation is the same, whether you're going to the swap meet and buying a $10 NES game, or you're buying a house for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. It all comes down to the same psychology of whether or not they think you're going to walk away from the deal, whether or not you know that you think they have more wiggle room. And this was not the most pleasant negotiation with the people to get the house. I'm sure they're nice people when they weren't under the pressure of having to sell their house and move with their family. But it could have been cleaner. And, you know, we butted heads a little bit. They thought I had more money, which I didn't. And I thought they had more, you know, they could have taken less because they probably had more money, which they didn't. So we both were like being stretched thin on the deal. But it worked out and I got the place and eventually I'll move in there, you know. I just ordered some nice little, you know, lights for the kitchen, like I said. Get rid of the ugly ass chandeliers that weren't even wired up. But that's okay. I got a guy helping out with that. And, yeah, then I'll try to get moved and then hop right into what traditionally is my favorite time of the year, you know, the Italian Christmas Eve dinner. So that'll happen right after I move. And so I could get back to normalcy a little bit by stuffing my face with antipasta and, you know, Italian pastries. What better way to celebrate moving, right? You know, just add on 14 pounds. There has been literally some Christmas seasons because when you have that Italian Christmas Eve meal, it's enough food for four meals, first of all. But then again, there's so many leftovers. You eat the same shit, and I say that lovingly because it's the best food ever. You eat the same shit for the next like 6 days before it runs out. You know, it's, oh, we got some prosciutto left over and you know, the fresh mozzarella is left over. And, you know, we just ordered eight extra cannolis and shriadelle and, you know, Napoleon just because we can, because it's the one time of year we can do it. And then you gain about 14 pounds in 6 days. And I might be exaggerating a little bit, but I've definitely before, like, weighed myself before Christmas Eve dinner and then weighed myself, like, January 3rd. And I've gone up 8 pounds in, like, a week and a half. Like, I've definitely before put on some pastry pudge. I will say it as pastry pudge. Can I trademark that? Can I have a t-shirt that says pastry pudge on it? So that's my life. That's what it's been this year. It's been an interesting year. And I'll have one more solo podcast or a guest a couple weeks from now before the end of the year. But I think obviously buying and selling and when you move, that's all stressful events that happen. So I'm trying to stay. You have to not let it get to you, and it's gotten to me here and there with everything going on. Especially since you know I can't just quit putting out content on YouTube, and you know I can't quit working on the SNES book while I'm doing this. There's still stuff that's going on, and besides conventions that I've been to the last couple of months. I mean, I literally went to a convention and was talking to the underwriter of my loan, like while I was walking to get the freaking U-Haul to move the NES books I had shipped out to the convention. And so like, I was like, this isn't the most pleasant time in my life, but it's necessary. It's change is not always easy, but it's necessary. And it's bigger and better things. And at least this time out, I'm not moving, you know, 3,000 miles away. You know, I'm moving fairly close. So it's more my control here where I'm like, all right, this is more manageable. It's going to cost me a lot less to move. It's going to be easier to move, even though my game collection is probably, I don't know, six times the size it was versus when I moved from Jersey to here. And that's probably being I don't know, conservative, it could be like 8 to 10 times the size, the amount of games. I mean, I remember I moved in like 2009 to come here. I didn't have close to complete NES set of games. I think I had like 600 NES games. Not a lot of ones in the box. And then obviously I didn't have close to a complete TurboGrafx set or anything else. Really, after I came to California is when my game collection ballooned up in size, partially because of the swap meet, but also because, you know, I got a little more serious into the other systems and, you know, finished the TurboGrafx-16 set in like 2000. And when I finished that, 2010, finished the Master System set in like 2011 or 2012. And then, you know, buying, oh, a bunch of Sega Saturn working design games that I don't really necessarily need in Sega CD games, but yeah, whatever, I get a good deal on them. You know, so that's how it's evolved. And I will get to that point where I figure out that, wow, this is a lot of clutter going on. Like, it'll really smack me in the face when I move into my new place and realize, wow, I have more room in the new place for this stuff. I still don't want all this laying around. So I probably will thin it out at some point. That's not saying I'm going to sell off my NES collection. I'm going to alarm everyone. Pat sold off his collection. It means it's over. Dump it. Sell, sell, sell. No, it just means that maybe there's some items in the collection that I don't necessarily need. Like, do I necessarily need, you know, all like whatever? I have like all but two or three NES box variants with the system. Do I need all those? Can I be happy with like four or five? Can I be happy with, you know, maybe I have like a few hundred Genesis games. I know I'm never going to play 270 of those games, and it's not a system I'm in love with to begin with. So, do I need all those? You know, go back to the Atari 2600 games that are worth $10 each, according to Storage War hacks. Do I need to have 300 Atari 2600 games, or am I just satisfied with having, you know, maybe some cool uncommon ones, and maybe some like ones like Combat, and ones like that, and ones I liked like as a kid, like Keystone Capers or Adventure. You know, you keep the fun ones like Yar's Revenge. So I will get to that point on some game consoles, and probably for some, like, you know, some toys that I've collected since I've been here. You know, I've mentioned before on the podcast about finding all like the G.I. Joe stuff, like all the card figures, and I have a ton of loose figures I picked up. And unless I can display them, and do I want to even display them? I mean, what enjoyment am I getting having stuff in boxes? Really. And that goes for a lot of other things, like having 200 boxed NES games or so in my garage that are sitting there. And they're not all like just dirt games. There are some good games, hard to find games that I have that, I mean, I have Kid Klown already in the box with the manual, and I also have it loose cart with the manual. Do I really need both of those? So those are, I guess, is this a midlife crisis? Am I middle aged considered yet? I am a little grayer, but I'm not sure that's it. But yeah, I think once you move, at least for me, once I'm moving here, this is going to be not necessarily a wake up call, but a time to reassess what's going on in terms of, I guess, having all of these material goods. And I've had these conversations before with people like Andre. My buddy Andre, like, just walking around Comic Con and seeing people buy all the exclusive toys they have there every year, and I've done that to an extent. I bought the like Ninja Turtle arcade figures from a couple years ago at Comic Con, and I bought like the Transformers versus G.I. Joe crossover exclusive, and it's like, yeah, it's very cool items, but at the end of the day, I just ask, like, when do I have enough of examples of the same exact thing? Like, if I have a bunch of G.I. Joes that I liked as a kid, and some Transformers I picked up at the swap meet. Do I really need to get like every single one that I find? Do I need to keep buying the new ones? I mean, at some point, I just have to say, I think I have enough. I think I have enough of this stuff. Of course, I'll buy every Muscle Man figure I come across because they're so tiny and cute. But the point is, it's a room issue, but then it's also thinking about, yeah, well, what happens in the future? And it's not like I'm thinking about what happens when I have my real midlife crisis and buy my Ferrari when I'm 58. What I'm thinking about, though, is do I want to not be 60 years old and then figure out that I'm the only one who, not just the one person that wants the stuff I have, but then realize for the past 25 years, I had all this extra shit in a garage sitting in boxes or a Tupperware container that I got no enjoyment out of. Maybe someone else would have gotten more enjoyment out of me owning a Serpentor, you know, 1985 or 86 G.I. Joe toy in the box in my garage. Even though I did grow up with it and I love it, at some point, maybe the nostalgia craze will dissipate as my mortality becomes more apparent. And I'm talking as if I'm going to die soon. Of course, we can all die soon, but not that I'm planning on that. But that's sort of the conversation I'm having with myself the past couple of years. And I'm not trying to scare you. If you like the stuff you have, that's fine. That's awesome. Keep your stuff. I'm not trying to say get rid of the toys you love or you know, the games that you love and have collected. But for me personally, I'll get to a point where I'll hit my threshold. I mean, at this point in time, I'm not compiling as much stuff, and that's a perfect word. I'm not compiling as much as I used to, but that's almost because I know I don't have the room for this shit anymore. I can't stack my place with more shit, and that's one of the reasons I am moving, because I have a game collection, but I need to work here as well. And it's not just because of having too much of a game collection, it's because I'm moving, but that's a small part of it. That's like a 10% part of the decision, and having a storage unit. I do have a storage unit too. So that's all I'm going to say on that topic. That went longer than I thought. This is almost like you guys are like my therapist. I got to pay you for me to record this not-so-common podcast. But, you know, I'm going to check Twitter and see if you guys want me to discuss anything. This is an interesting question. At Coach H. Gonzalez asks, have we arrived at a place where, as educators, we should be teaching in class on common sense and how to use it? Voltaire said, common sense is not so common. And what does that basically mean? That basically means, I think, is that people, there's not a plurality of common sense being used. But how do you define common sense? What is the actual definition of common sense? Like, what is that actually? Let me look this up so I don't know. Common sense, good sense and sound judgment in practical matters. To me, common sense comes not just from having some sort of intelligence or even education about a specific matter, but experience and learning from experience. And that, I think, is more of a philosophical discussion. I don't know how as an educator you can teach kids or impart to your high school or college students that, listen, in life you're gonna mess up. That's fine. But you have to come away with a lesson from your screw up. You have to debrief yourself, in essence, in your mind. You have to look inside. You have to be introspective and say, why did I make this bad decision? And that could be a bad business decision, bad social decision, a decision in your relationship, a decision in your job. Why was I motivated to do something that was not, in the grand scheme of things, a smart move? Was I maybe attempting to do something as a short-term gain and didn't see medium and long-term how it could affect me? Was I not caring about someone else's feelings at the time and did something that now is potentially hurting them? This is tough to get. This is a great question that is being asked about this, and I appreciate the question. And you're a coach here, it looks like. So, yeah, this is a high school football coach. So the young men that are looking up to you as a mentor or leader, and I'm, geez, you're putting a lot on me, but I would say that is that you always have to not be afraid to make decisions, because life is all about calculated risk. But when you screw up, first of all, don't take it so hard if it's something that you honestly didn't see coming. But the next time that similar decision comes around, or a similar crossroads or choice, remember the last time it happened and don't do the same thing. What the definition of insanity is, what is the definition of insanity? It's doing the same thing but expecting a different result to happen. Well, there you go. To me, that's what common sense is just it's sound judgment, but that can be rooted in experience from being in a similar situation and then building upon that experience, seeing maybe this second time you encounter this dilemma in your life, a social dilemma or something happening with a friend, you have a disagreement. Remember the last time it happened. Remember how you felt. Remember your train of thought going into why you made that decision, good or bad. Try to put yourself in the other person's shoes as well, and maybe that can help you figure out what were they thinking at the time. What were they looking to get out of the situation? What was their goal? What was your goal? You know, and I think that's the best way I can put into what common sense is. Now, if it's talking about making decisions for maybe political decisions, who you're going to vote for, looking at laws, obviously research goes into a lot of things, being able to decipher what's reality and what's not. I mean, it even happens with, you know, people I know that are very smart people. They forward me links and emails, and this isn't even going back to like all the fake Facebook posts that were promoted that helped potentially color people's opinion politically in 2016 that might have helped swing an election one way or the other. But I've had people forward me links saying, oh, look at this, I can't believe this, or this happened. And then I would look at the link and go, is this real? And do some simple research on the matter, and within 5-10 minutes be like, no, I think this is not real. This could be a fake, maybe not fake news, but this is a fake link getting passed around, or fake story. I guess fake news. So not, you have to be able to doubt yourself and doubt your own judgment in order to really make sound decisions at time. And maybe that's what common sense is too. Not always trusting totally your intuition about something. Maybe you can make the wrong decision in a situation. Maybe you can take a breath when you're about to make a big decision and maybe seek advice from others, do more intense research, especially if you are 100% sure. Maybe you can double check on the matter. Because sometimes our pride gets in the way of us thinking we can even be wrong about a decision. And that's the worst part of all. And now I think we're seeing that in the political world, unfortunately, and people who have made perhaps the wrong political decision being too proud to budge on something they didn't and not being able to admit, maybe I did the wrong thing. Maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I could have done something differently. And there's nothing wrong with admitting that. The only thing that is incorrect is being so strident in your past views and not being able to consider an alternative, not being able to say, well, let me at least consider another viewpoint or another path or another avenue. And I think that's the best I can say right now without rambling too much. Thanks so much, Coach Gonzalez, and best of luck. Let's see, where are you? Where are you a football coach here? St. Thomas Aquinas High School in, L.A., Louisiana. So, yeah, and I'm sure you ask, just the fact that you are asking that question, you know, means that I think you're probably a good mentor, a good teacher, a good coach. So good on you! This is from this is Blinky, who says, don't copy that floppy. Can you tell us any retail stories from your time at Suncoast? Okay, so I worked at Suncoast Motion Picture Company. I don't know if they're any in business anymore, but they used to sell VHS and DVDs. I was there working at Suncoast when they first started selling DVDs. And I remember a time, you can, when you could literally count up every DVD that existed. There was like only like 100 DVDs that existed. I remember like Fight Club being one of the first DVDs, really, or first popular ones with all the, or Memento, where you had all these weird special features and menus. And, oh, it's like you can't do that with VHS. I remember the big selling point when you don't. Now I know I'm old and I'm dating myself. Not literally, that'd be weird. But the big selling point originally for DVDs was that you didn't have to rewind after you're done watching. That was actually a huge selling point going back to the late 90s, like 97, 98, 99. That annoyance of rewinding that tape, besides the better clarity of picture, besides the fact that DVDs don't degrade the image and audio quality, and the quality is better in the special picture. But that was a big deal back then. It was that. It's like, oh, alternate camera angles. And to this day, not many at all DVDs use like simultaneous angles to watch. I remember that was a big selling point. But anyway, Suncoast stories. What I remember is this. I remember being paid minimum wage, $5.05 an hour, you know, a summer in between college semesters, and thinking that, oh, I can just, you know, just screw around because it's a dumb mall job. But no, they treated it, the idiots there treated it deadly seriously. And so they would force me to, for example, reorganize the drama VHS section when I'd done it the day before. Like, make sure it's in alphabetical order. And I know, I said, I just did it yesterday, just to give you busy work. Instead of just let you sit around and watch Barney playing on the fucking TV, like any person would want to do because they work at a Suncoast. It's a Suncoast, people. It's not life or death here. You know, there's no life experience from working at a VHS store. So they would screw with you. They'd take one or two. I remember they took one or two out of the sci-fi section, and they said, "Oh, you missed it." And it's like, I'm getting paid $5 an hour. It's like I'm wasting that much in gas in my freaking stupid Geo Prism driving here, you know. And one time I got sent home for wearing a shirt that wasn't exactly black; it was like faded, half gray. And I was like, "You got to be kidding me!" I was not treated well. I was semi-sexually harassed. Yes, I was. It can happen to men. By a manager. This is interesting. It was the manager who was younger than me. Should I protect the innocent and the alleged sexual harassment? Alleged. She was younger than me, but she was a manager. She was under 18, though, so I'm not sure how legally she could have managed, like, handled all the money and count it and do all that stuff. But, she would comment on the shirts I was wearing, and they were tight, and she got close to me, uncomfortably close at times. And, you know, when you're 20, especially when you're a guy, you don't think about it. I can be potentially being sexually harassed, not realize it. But she did some improper things. And then that's not to say it's a witch hunt against her or woe is me, since this is, like, you know, at this point in time, 16 years ago or whatever. But it wasn't pleasant, you know. Then again, you know, maybe if I was attracted to her, who knows, at the time I would have been flattered and, you know, and I would have been okay with it. But I definitely was not at the time. So I dealt with that. I dealt with that mild sexual harassment. And I dealt with the quote-unquote cool guy who'd been working at Suncoast after college, who had probably been there for 8 years at that time. And he was the manager. And he had his nice ride. And he was commenting about how he, you know, he was going places working at Suncoast and working his way up to maybe regional manager. And at the time, I felt like asking him, like, or being like, what does a regional manager possibly make? Like, 38 grand? Is that what you're, you know? I'm not saying making 38 grand is bad or should be disrespected, but not working at Suncoast. Those two don't go together. I'd rather work. And I had a job where I made $38,000 almost exactly, or 40. So I'm not putting down the fact that he was only making that, but don't be so proud that you're a Suncoast manager doing that, because it's, well, it is what it is. And good on him, though, for having goals, though, at the time. But he was kind of just a jerk, though. He kind of swung his Suncoast dick around, you know, and not that I was treated poorly, but it was always like, yeah, I was kind of looked down upon as just a guy working in a store. And, you know, and let's see, what else happened? A lot of shoplifting, but they didn't want any trouble. So they would say that if someone came, their policy at the time was this: it was, if someone returned an item to you and didn't have a receipt, just give them a store credit. I was like, that sounds reasonable. The issue, though, was that there was times when me or another worker would see someone walk in without an item, pick an item off the shelf, and then return it. So someone returned, I think it was a girl working next to me, and it wasn't the one that sexually harassed me. It was the other one who would just try to screw with me with reordering a couple of VHS tapes on the shelf just to mess with me. Great job, right? 505. Someone came up. I saw the guy grab, like, it was like a box set. It might have been a Pokemon box set from the late 90s, or Hello Kitty or something like that. But something very juvenile versus this big muscular guy who was probably like 38. And he goes up to her, "I want to return this." And I'm like looking at her like, "Well, you didn't just see the guy like literally 10 feet away just take it off the shelf?" And so he was a pro. He'd probably done this before. He realized that these stores don't want any trouble. They don't want to risk, like, calling security and getting sued, because that's basically what I was told all the time. So she just rung him up, you know, a store credit for like probably 40, 50 bucks at the time, and the guy left with it. And afterwards, I was like, I think I saw him take it off the shelf. Said, "Well, no, we don't want to worry about that." You know, it's just like, oh my God. Working in retail sucks. I don't see how Ian puts up with it or has put up for over 10 years. I worked in retail for a very small amount of time, and I knew it was terrible. So besides that, yeah, it was just awful working at Suncoast. And then they tried to – it was like, I guess, the equivalent of working at a Funkland or GameStop at the time is pushing the rewards card, which wasn't free. It cost like $5. But they would yell at you if you didn't push it for – I mean, for every single customer. And you'd get like 20% of people would sign up for it because it'd be like, oh, if you sign up for only $5 today, you'll save whatever, 10% off your videos, and that's almost the $5. So you get some people to do it. It was just annoying. But the issue was they were promoting it. I didn't get a cut of that. I wasn't getting any percentage of store sales of Suncoast Motion Picture reward card. I wasn't getting any profit sharing from that franchise. So the people that were yelling at you to do that probably were. They probably got a bonus based upon the amount of money you hit over a certain amount, that corporate set. So just that sort of bullshit I didn't like at this store. And plus, you know, working awful hours, but in any retail, you're going to be working awful hours. But, you know, I would be at least every Friday or Saturday, I was working till closing, which at the mall was, I think, 9 p.m. or 9:30, which meant I wasn't getting home until 10. So, you know, I still hung out with I had a lot more energy when I was 20, 21. I still hung out with my friends. I go to TGI Fridays and, you know, stuff my face with, like, mozzarella sticks and an Oreo Madness. But it just, at the time, was just unfortunate that I had that job. But I was too, you know, I should have done? I should have worked at a GameStop, or at the time it was still Funkland. I should have did that. I should have worked at a Funkland, and, you know, I could have got stay invents for 29 cents at the time. Anything else from Suncoast? I think I hit all the major points. Oh, so then I quit because I was going back to school. Obviously, I quit. I think I quit like a week early. Fuck them. Who cares? $5.05 an hour. You don't need 2 weeks' notice. Eat me. They had the balls, though, to try to call me after all that, after the mild sexual harassment, after being treated like garbage, given busy work when I should have been able to hang out and relax for the most part. After all that, they had the balls, I remember, to call me during my winter holiday break and ask, hey, you want to come in and get some hours and work? I could not hang up the phone fast enough. They're lucky I didn't curse them out on the phone. They're absolutely lucky I didn't do that. So there you go. All right. Let's see, anything else? The Patreon fee change, that was reversed. I think me and Ian are probably going to go over that in the future. Net neutrality. I don't know if you covered before. Okay, here's all you need to know about net neutrality. Here's all you need to know. I'm going to sum this up quickly. If you are pro net neutrality, basically what you're saying to me is that, and I agree, you are fine with the status quo with how the internet's operated. You are fine with the development. We've had companies at their own pace and ISPs and cable companies creating faster internet and Google creating, laying down Google Fiber everywhere. You're satisfied and you like the fact that the cable companies and like Verizon and shitty Comcast can't pick and choose how quickly they deliver certain websites and bandwidth for Netflix, and they can't put a clamp on that. You're fine with it being how it is, and you are fearful of a change that could empower ISPs and cable companies to then alter how it currently works. And I agree with you. So it's hard for me to see people who are anti-net neutrality to come up with a reasonable argument that will say, like, what are you not satisfied with currently with how the internet is? What are you not satisfied with how it's serviced? Like, what is wrong with it right now? Has the speed, has there not been innovation that you don't like? Do you think it can be improved at a quicker pace? Because let me tell you this. I've been using ISP since like 95. Going back to when MSN had their Microsoft Network, we had AOL for a short time. We had local ones. And I'll say this. In the past 5, 10, 15 years, I've seen, just from competition alone, the internet speeds being provided me, and there's like 3 or 4 different services I can get. They've jumped up. I have 100 megabytes down right now and like 20 up. That is great. That's fine. I can stream HD Netflix through Wi-Fi fine. So being against net neutrality I don't see how it can be better to this point if it didn't exist. I just see all the potential for it to be abused by the ISPs and Comcast and AT&T potentially and Verizon and whoever provides you with that. I can see them saying that them deciding, well, we think this website's doing potential illegal activities. Oh no, by the way, it's using bandwidth. So we're not gonna shut that website down. We're just gonna throttle it to hell. We're gonna throttle Netflix to hell. And we won't pass the savings on to you, the consumer, because we're the good guys, but we're then gonna go to Netflix and say, guess what, assholes? If you want people to be satisfied with your service, you're gonna have to pay out to us. So then Netflix you will have to say, all right. And Netflix would come out and say, they'll say, we're getting spanked by the cable companies. So now instead of it being $12 a month, it's $20 a month. Facebook, YouTube could potentially be, you know, blackmailed by internet service providers if you get rid of net neutrality. Porn sites, Pornhub could be throttled. It'll be at the whim of who's ever giving you the internet service to say, these particular websites, we can control the speed of. Why in God's name would anyone want that? Unless you have stock in Verizon or stock in AT&T or stock in Comcast or stock in Cablevision. I mean, for example, when I look at these issues, whether it's statutes that come up for a ballot in San Diego every couple of years, I look at, you know what I look like? Look at who is the proponent for and against these issues. So when I see directly that the biggest proponents for wiping out net neutrality are the ISPs and cable companies, why would I be in favor of that when they had done nothing but fuck consumers over for the past 30 years? Growing up in New Jersey, in most of New Jersey, due to lobbying directly from the cable companies, if you lived in a certain municipality, you either had the choice of, say, Cablevision or you had Comcast. There was no competition, at least when I was growing up. You had no choice what cable company, because you had controlled monopolies from the cable companies. These are the same people that want to wipe out net neutrality. And you're going to trust that? You're going to trust them to not take advantage of it? Really? You're naive if you think that. You're naive if you think that they won't take advantage of that. This isn't capitalism at this point. Internet is almost, to me, it's a informative resource and a utility. So say, for example, trust me, and the utility companies aren't that much better, but the utility companies say they decided next month, yeah, you know what? Fuck it. We don't like these certain businesses. We're going to charge them 50 times the amount of water as the next person next door because we don't like them. That's basically what you're doing. By getting rid of net neutrality, you're basically at the whim of a company saying, all right, well, fuck it. We can just throttle the internet for these sites and for that, and we can just pick and choose. Say there's a business we don't like. Say for example, I don't know, the New York Mets have a cable channel. They have a cable network and they have an internet website. What if they get in dispute over the cable rights and the amount being paid out to be on, you know, Comcast, for example? So Comcast could say, oh, you know, oh, maybe we just throttle your website because we can do it. We have the ability to do that. Maybe we have the ability to have your cable, you know, even over because it's bandwidth either way. Maybe your Mets network, maybe we don't show it in 1080i or 1080p. Maybe we show it only 720. What the fuck are you going to do about it? There's a lot of wacky shit that can happen by getting rid of net neutrality. A lot of wacky shit that it's just a Pandora's box. And so even the small pros of, well, there could be innovation, faster internet, there's a hell of a lot more cons that outweigh the pros of getting rid of net neutrality. Because I'm happy with the way internet is right now. You know, I don't want individual companies to be held over a barrel. Because again, if YouTube's held over a barrel by the ISPs, they're, you know, they're not, because Google's not just going to pay out of their pocket and be okay. They're going to pass it along to us. So then there will be a paid gateway for web. Like, that's a real possibility. That's not just yelling, you know, yelling in the sky at clouds and saying, oh, the world's going to end. That's a distinct possibility. If it could be taken advantage of and certain businesses control it, they can do that. And like I said, cable companies and ISPs don't have the best track record in the past. I mean, there's a reason why Slingbox and YouTube TV and all these alternatives to cable are popping up. There's a fucking reason why people are unplugging. Because for so long, people asked for a la carte cable. And it was always a possibility. There was no reason why in the 90s they couldn't allow people to say, you know what, I'm going to be able to choose what channels I want instead of having only three or four awful plans. Give me these 20 channels and I'll pay $40 a month instead of forced to be giving 68 channels I don't want and I'm paying 120. This was stuff that they tried to get, I remember, on the ballot in New Jersey. I remember in the late 90s they were trying to do that, trying to push for that. To give consumers more option. And because New Jersey could be corrupt at times, and because, again, you had lobbying, and, again, you had individual cable companies in control of certain regions, it was insane. It was literally like, okay, you move to this town, okay, you got Comcast. You move to that town, you get Cablevision. And that was it. Of course, this is before DirecTV and all that got more popular. But there was a time where, yeah, there was only one game in town, and you were stuck for cable TV. Awful. The good news is this, and net neutrality has been it's not good news that it got repealed through the FCC by a 5-person panel, 3-2. It still has to go through Congress, and there's going to be legal battles, and this is not over. This is just the beginning for this. But there should be a law put through the Senate and the House to make sure that net neutrality stays. So that's all I'm going to say about that. You know, I just don't see any reasonable argument. To get rid of it, unless you think you can profit from it in some way by charging other companies for using more bandwidth or more websites. I just don't see it. All right. Let's see what's going on. This is from at Tech Sauce. As a fellow Italian American, I'd be interested to know your family's traditions, mostly food related. Did your grandmother also serve dinner at 2 p.m? Yeah. Supper on Sundays when grandma would make, meat sauce or gravy, as we call it, and meatballs and sausage and brajol. Now I'm fucking hungry. Great. I forget if it was 2 or 3, but it was definitely somewhere in that region that it wasn't every Sunday, but it was like at least once or twice a month we go over. I miss you, Grandma. You made some good meatballs with pinoli nuts or pine nuts, and she nice, just a perfect amount of sugar in the sauce. It was great. Let's see. Is Thanksgiving dying with so many stores open on Thanksgiving Day this year? At Niemla, Karen is working on the Super Nintendo book. Is Thanksgiving dying? No, because there's always going to be people, I think, that will refuse to shop on Thanksgiving. Because either they think it's not worth my time, I actually want to enjoy my Thanksgiving dinner, or have a nice turkey nap afterwards. So I don't think Thanksgiving's dying. I mean, there's always been people that think it's going to be worth not spending time with their family to get a deal on presents. Sure. If corporations think they want to screw over their employees by starting on Thursday instead of Friday, that's unfortunate. That's up to, you know, and looking at these poor GameStop employees, they don't want to be there on Thanksgiving, but they don't have a choice. So it's unfortunate, and that's capitalism. I'm not saying you should ban stores being able to open up on Thanksgiving. That'd be a little too far. But, you know, this didn't exist a generation ago, that's for sure. I never heard of this happening. The worst you got was stores opening. You had Midnight Madness sales for Black Friday starting Thanksgiving at midnight. That was the worst you got, or 11 p.m. You never got stores open at 12 p.m. or 4 p.m. on Thanksgiving. Never saw that in the 80s and 90s, at least what I remember about that. Let's see. Yes, that's what's going on in my life right now. a lot of good questions, though.
Jericho sneak attacking Omega. That's going to be cool. New Japan Pro Wrestling Wrestle Kingdom, January 4th. My pal Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho. Nice old school wrestling angle. Blood and just beating each other up and just a blood feud. It's going to be great. Going to be fantastic. Let's see. What else? Any other questions on here? How does Pat feel about cats? I grew up with cats. I love cats. I had one cat. Then I had brother cats. And after I move, I'd like to get a cat at some point. My girlfriend does have a cat that he's a rambunctious little bastard. And he chews my sandals. I think he has a foot fetish. But he's nice. He's a nice tabby kitty. And I love cats. I don't trust people that don't like cats. I always see people that say something like, oh, I'm a dog or cat person. That's fine. You could be in favor of a dog or cat. But when you start saying, I hate cats, I don't trust you as an individual. I don't trust you. Because cats are fucking awesome. And they rule the internet, too. You always mention the job you quit because you hate it, but I don't think you ever went into detail on it. Maybe I missed it. No, I didn't. Maybe for my autobiography, the last job I quit, the one I quit 5 years ago, I'll get into that. But that was a more corporate, traditional corporate job working in a cubicle. And that's all I'll say about it at this point in time. Disney buying Fox. Well, monopoly when it comes to entertainment. I'll go over that with Ian on the CU podcast. And I think that's more of a play at Fox had a 33% stake in Hulu. I think there's a lot that has to do with that because Disney was rumored to create their own streaming service. And now they have one already built up that they can take over. I think that's a big part of it besides getting you don't pay $50 billion just for Fantastic Four and X-Men. That's not exactly worth it. But you do it though in order to expand internationally and take over a bunch of networks overseas and also for something like Hulu. Oh, you definitely do that then. You lost me at common sense. Not so common. Oh man. That's funny. Anyway, so that's what's going on. I appreciate it. I don't know if I rambled too much here on this podcast. Before I go, let me tell you about That's It Bites. They're the dark chocolate fruit truffles, the same makers of the fruit bars and veggie bars that me and Ian talk about all the time. They're delicious. They're absolutely delicious. With the holidays coming, you can give the gift of healthy snacking with That's It gift boxes as well. They come in a variety of sizes and will be perfect for the health-conscious friends and family in your life. From Whole30 to Paleo, That's It has a bar for you. Make sure you check out at That's It on Twitter and Instagram for giveaways running all December long. Yeah, so go to That's It and go to thatsitfruit.com. Enter code NOTCOMMON to save 10% on any order today, whether it's the fruit bars, the veggie bars, the awesome chocolate bites that are, they are certifiably delicious, and they're actually a little bit healthy because it's all natural ingredients. The only ingredients is like if it's apple and a mango, you know what the ingredients are? The ingredients are apple, mango, and dark chocolate, organic dark chocolate. That's it. You get a package of about 5 big-ass truffles. It's a full at least. I think it's 1 or 2 servings of fruit because it's apple, and then you get the mango, and it's all. It's basically like the version of, it's basically like eating the fruit bar, but it's compacted in a ball, and you get awesome dark chocolate on the outside. So, yeah, I love them. It's no preservative, around 150 calories in a serving, only gluten-free, non-GMO, low-fat, no soy, vegan, certified paleo-friendly. It's 2 full servings of fruit. I should look at my copy more often. So every day you can have one and get a nice indulgent treat and get your 2 full servings of fruit at the same time. They're also available at CVS. Again, go to thatsitfruit.com, enter code NOTCOMMON when checking out, and you'll save 10% off your order. Yeah, speaking of that's it for this edition of the Not So Common podcast. Subscribe if you haven't. Even though you're listening to this, you might be watching on YouTube. There's an audio version on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you use to listen to it. You can subscribe to the podcast. You also can rate the podcast, leave a comment, and spread the word on social media. Let others know how much you enjoy my rambling. You can also, if you want to, you can try to advertise with me. You can email notsocommon@thepunkeffect.com if you're interested in advertising on the podcast. I also have a Patreon account, which is for this podcast and Pat the NES Punk as well. And you could check out that at patreon.com/ Pat Contry. That's it. I hope you guys have a happy holiday season, a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah if you celebrate either, Happy Kwanzaa if you celebrate, or, you know, I talk to people that don't necessarily celebrate Christmas, but they'll go on a holiday, you know, they'll go on a vacation for it, but so they're celebrating life in their own way. Happy Life Day if we're talking about the Star Wars Christmas special. That's a bad one. But yeah, make sure you enjoy it with friends and family. Gifts, giving gifts is always better than receiving, I always say. So kids out there, remember, Santa doesn't always bring what you want. So make others feel good by giving them what they want. And be a good person to each other. That's always, you know, good thing to do. Be a good person. Go out and be a good person and don't make sure you don't vote in an alleged child molester into the Senate. Good on you, Alabama. You probably made the right choice there. You probably made the right choice. I don't know how I go from a nice holiday message to talking about an alleged pedophile and child molester, but I just did. So we'll just wipe that clean and forget I said that. All right, guys. I'll see you later on. The next time you hear this, it most likely will either be in my new residence, or I'll be recording at my local library because I won't have internet yet, and then I'll be really awkward. All right, take care, everyone.